Todd, you're hosting with me today, filling in for John. You haven't been here for 3 weeks, but you've probably been listening at the coverage we've had of what people are saying is perhaps a domino effect occurring in the Arab world.
Yeah. Tunisia, Algeria, Egypt, straight across.
You could argue, though, that Sudan, with the independence vote for Sudan, maybe played into that. But it looks like Iran may be possibly part of this story. Thousands of Iranians protested yesterday. Hundreds of riot police officers beat the protesters. They fired tear gas to try to contain the street protests. These are the largest protests since the end of the 2009 uprising, which was called by some the Green Revolution, and other people called it the Twitter Revolution. Joining us now to talk about what's happening in Iran is Kelly Nicknejad, founder of the Tehran Bureau, which was created in partnership with Frontline. Frontline, of course, produced by our partner station WGBH in Boston. And we're also joined by Trita Parsi. He's the president of the National Iranian American Council and author of Treacherous Alliance, The Secret Dealings of Israel, Iran, and the U.S. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Kelly, maybe you can help us understand exactly what is going on in Iran. We don't seem to have a lot of details in terms of how many protesters are out, how widespread it is, or whether it's just in the capital.
One correspondent that I spoke to yesterday, who had been all over the city, said, put the number at hundreds of thousands. I don't know if that's exaggerated or not, but it was corroborated by another narrative from inside Iran that said it was a completely different source and put the number at that. But on the other end, I've heard the BBC say hundreds, and I've heard others say thousands. But what happened was the response was, on a whole, restrained, more so than in the past. Even though there were scuffles and there were beatings, it was still not at the same level as it was last year. And until 4 p.m., the cell phones were not shut off, so the word spread really quickly that there wasn't being that much violence used. So it is possible that those numbers could be accurate, that much more than we saw. I mean, with the internet down, with communications so difficult from Iran, I think it would be expected that we didn't get more videos or photographs that could back up those numbers in any way. So we'll have to see over the next few days.
Trita Parsi, maybe you can, first of all, give us your sense of how widespread a movement this is, whether it's a popular uprising, as we saw in Egypt, or whether this is just a smaller group of opposition groups. And also, we've been hearing reports that this is possibly a continuation of what occurred in the Green Revolution rather than something new. What do you think?
First of all, when it comes to the widespread, I spoke to people who reported that this was taking place in many other cities, including all the way down to the south in the city of Ahvaz. So it seems like it is something that is not just Tehran-centric. Furthermore, there were reports that within the crowd, there were people who were also, not necessarily students or from the upper strata of society, but poorer people, which may indicate that there's also an economic dimension to this protest, which is a little bit different from what we had in 2009 that was primarily focused on the fraud in the elections. You could also see that in some of the slogans that were being chanted, which focused on what is happening to the oil money, etc. So it seems actually that it does have a greater attractiveness potentially than it did before. And it's not surprising. There's a lot of economic misery. Sanctions have contributed to that. And the Iranian government has also implemented a subsidy reform that significantly increases the expenses for ordinary Iranians.
Well, Trita, you know, there is this storyline that a lot of people in the media are repeating, that we're seeing that a domino is beginning to fall in the Arab world, that they began in Tunisia, possibly in Sudan. They moved on to Egypt, and they're now seeing those same dominoes falling in Yemen and Iran as well. But, you know, that didn't end up being true. The domino theory didn't work out in Southeast Asia when Eisenhower proposed it, and we don't necessarily know if that's the case. Do you see Iran as a possible domino coming from Tunisia and Egypt, or is it a very individual case?
I think yes and no. First of all, what is happening in Iran precedes what's happened in Egypt and in Tunisia. This is a continuation of a very, very long struggle that also precedes 2009. The desire for democracy in Iran is a very long-standing one and rooted all the way back to the Iranian Constitutional Revolution in 1906. So, yes, this is something that precedes it. At the same time, there's new one inspiration and hope as a result of the quick victories in Egypt and Tunisia. which is very interesting in and of itself, because the Iranians have traditionally not looked toward the Arab world for political influence and inspiration.
Well, Kelly Nikmjad of the Tehran Bureau, what were you saying, Kelly?
It wasn't me. I didn't say anything.
Well, I'm wondering, to what extent can the government completely crack down on protests there? I mean, can they shut down Twitter? Can they shut down people's cell phones? Can they completely control what's occurring in their streets?
Well, they can do, I mean, I think like China, they can't completely shut down the internet because so much business is tied up with it. But they, you know, this happens on a regular basis, you know, access to Twitter, access to Facebook, access even to certain email accounts are stifled, but it comes and goes. But for the most part, I think because, especially during times of expected protest, there, you know, the internet is extremely slow, so it's very difficult to get a photo out, let alone video. But some do trickle across for different reasons. But I mean, we saw them crack down. Yesterday might have been more difficult because the Turkish president was there. I don't know if that was an excuse or not, but because there had been so much grandstanding in terms of linking what had happened in Egypt and Tunisia to the 1979 revolution and coming on the heels of the anniversary, I think it did put them in a difficult spot, but we've seen in the past they haven't held back when
they've been protesters on the streets. Well, last question for you, Trita Parsi. Do we expect these protests to continue? Was this a one-day event yesterday?
I think that's going to be the big test of demonstrators, to see if they're going to be able to sustain it in the manner that the Egyptians and the Tunisians did. The regime is, however, a little bit more brutal, I would say, than the regimes in Tunisia and Egypt. And I think also there's a completely different international presence in Egypt and in Tunisia that makes it much more difficult for those governments to sustain brutal violence and repression in a manner that, unfortunately, is much easier for the Iranian government to do because it is cut off from the rest of society.
And we'll have to leave it there. That's Trita Parsi, president of the National Iranian American Council, author of Treacherous Alliance, and Kelly Nikmjad, founder of the Tehran Bureau, which is created in partnership with Frontline from WGBH in Boston.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.